You're listening to The Naked Scientist with Chris Smith and me, Helen Scales. We're talking this week about the physics of fusion. Later on, we'll be hearing from Kate Lancaster from the Rutherford Appleton Lab. But first, we have, since we've had a little bit of an insight already from Steve into how fusion works and how it might provide us with huge amounts of relatively clean power, but what really is going on about whether or not we can make a mini sun in a lab? It's no mean feat, and how is it done? Well, we sent Meera Senthilingam along to the Joint European Torus, which was the first machine to make significant amount of fusion power. It was enough for 16,000 houses. She also asked some questions about the physics of fusion when she met up with Andrew Kirk and Jeff Onganar to discuss the challenges involved in making fusion power a reality.
This week, I'm at the Culham Science Centre in Oxfordshire, which is home to the Joint European Torus Project, also known as JET, the world's largest nuclear fusion research facility. Nuclear fusion is the process that occurs in our sun to keep it burning, and if made possible on Earth, it could provide us with vast amounts of energy. Now, current work on fusion involves heating the hydrogen isotopes deuterium and tritium to high enough temperatures that they fuse together to form helium, releasing more energy as a result of this fusion. But it's proving to be a real challenge, because whilst there are techniques to heat and energise the atoms, such as using currents and beams of high-energy atoms, the real trick is to actually maintain these temperatures long enough for fusion to occur continuously. With me now is Andrew Kirk, a senior scientist here at the Culham Science Centre. So Andrew, fusion happens so naturally in our sun. Why is it so hard to recreate here on Earth?
OK, to make fusion happen, we have to get two atomic nuclei close enough together to make them fuse. That can only happen if the two nuclei collide at very high speeds, which means high temperatures, so tens to 100 million degrees centigrade. Once you've got particles at these temperatures, you've got to find a way of actually keeping them together and not making them melt any material surfaces. So what we do is we use magnetic fields to actually constrain the charged particles in the plasma and keep them away from these surfaces while we try to heat them up to these extreme temperatures.
And so how do you actually go about doing this and creating fusion?
Here we use a machine called a tokamak, which is a Russian acronym which basically means a magnetic bottle, which allows us to actually constrain charged particles.
And how does it go about doing that?
So a tokamak is a sealed vacuum vessel. The inside of a tokamak actually resembles a ring donut into which we inject a small amount of gas. Instead of using hydrogen, we use the heavier forms of hydrogen called deuterium tritium. We then take this gas and turn it into a plasma. A plasma is the fourth state of matter, so you know you've got solids, liquids, gases. But the next state is a plasma in which you've stripped the electrons off from the atoms. You've got the positively charged nuclei and the electrons together in effectively an electromagnetic gas.
And what happens once you've created this plasma then?
OK, what we then do is we use the magnetic field to shape the plasma and to keep it away from touching the sides of the vessel, and then we actually start to heat it.
Why do you need to keep it away from the sides of the vessel?
Because anywhere that this plasma comes into contact with the vessel, A, it would erode the material or damage the material of the vessel, but more importantly, it would actually cool down the plasma and it would stop the fusion happening, or you'd have to put in a lot more energy to actually keep the plasma hot.
But how does the tokamak actually do that?
We generate the magnetic fields in such a fashion that the charged particles, which follow magnetic fields, spiral around and around the tokamak in a shape that resembles that of a slinky spring. So they follow around in this helical pattern all the way around the tokamak. The slinky spring stops the charged particles escaping from the edge of the plasma and therefore keeps them away from the walls. And we put a gap of about 10 centimetres in between the edge of the plasma and the wall.
Five, four, three, two, one, zero.
So I've now come to the control room of the JET project. Now, the tokamak isn't actually very far. It's about 60 metres away from us. With me now is Jeff Onganar, who's the task force leader here on the JET project. So, Jeff, how big is the actual tokamak here? So we can only see a slight part of it, but how big is the overall thing?
The overall thing, including all the diagnostic and heating systems, is about 13 metres high and 30 metres in diameter. It has to be a certain size to produce a certain amount of energy. That is what physics teaches us. Small machines can only do a little bit. Large machines can do much better. And then a reactor will even be larger than JET.
So we're here now in the control room. What's monitored on the project from here?
The control room is in fact the place where we control and plan the experiments. So we set up all the physical parameters needed to run the machine for a particular experiment, to test out a particular idea. So every 20 minutes we can have a new experiment, and a new experiment means that we change another parameter, see what is the effect, and the final aim of all these experiments is to get to the best possible magnetic confining system. That means that we want to optimize the heat we need to get the reactions going. We want to optimize the time the heat stays in the machine, because that will then allow to run as efficiently as possible.
So we heard a few minutes ago that a pulse had just taken place. And we've got this screen here in front of us that has all the facts and the stats of previous pulses that have just happened in, say, the past couple of hours. It's all to optimise the confinement of the plasma, to basically keep it at as high a temperature as possible. What has the energy output in relation to input been so far with the project?
JET was designed to show that fusion is scientifically possible. When JET was planned, we had only small machines, which fit more or less on the table, and Europe decided to take a bold step and to build a much larger machine to show that the amount of heat produced by fusion reactions could be equal to the amount of heat you need to get the reactions going. And we have proven that we get to about 70% of the heat back compared to the heat we put in. And I think with the current developments of the last years, if we try again, we will get much closer to one now. So that, in fact, the scientific possibility of fusion essentially is shown.
Are you now then hoping to create more output, i.e. create more energy than you are putting in, and therefore obviously having an energy source?
Yes. So in JET, that will not be possible, because JET is not built like this. To get much more heat out, you need a larger machine. And this larger machine is designed and is now starting to be constructed in Cadarache in France. And this machine is called ITER, which stands for the International Thermonuclear Experimental Reactor. ITER is there to show that science and technology now go together and can be used to realise a fusion power reactor later.
Jeff Ungernaar, and before that, Andrew Kirk, talking to Miracintha Lingam about the challenges that they face in making nuclear fusion a viable power source and the next steps towards developing a working power station.
You're listening to The Naked Scientist with Chris Smith and me, Helen Scales. And coming up later, we'll be finding out what happened in kitchen science this week. And you should be having a go at home if all you need is a grape. Cut it in half nearly with a little bit of skin left over to join the two halves. Pop it in the microwave for a couple of seconds and let us know what you found. But we will also be talking to Kate Lancaster in a minute about how fusion might be triggered using lasers.